for joining us, Sarah. Can you tell us a bit about your career history? How did you get to the position you're in now?
So I've had quite a potted career history. I started off doing a degree in English literature, and then I was encouraged by one of my third year, my final honours year module leaders, to continue with that, to do an MLit. And I really, really enjoyed doing the research aspect of that, really enjoyed the freedom that it gave me to explore different ideas that I hadn't been able to do so before, to look at different kind of texts and authors that weren't really part of canonical English literature. And I was thinking about doing a PhD at that point, ended up kind of not going through with it. Spent a few years kind of dabbling in lots of different things, working in London, being part of various bands and music staff, being part of like a fiction writing world. Eventually decided that I needed to get some sort of proper job, appropriately capitalized, big P, big J. Did a PGCE in English literature at Cambridge. And whilst I really enjoyed certain aspects of that, I really enjoyed the aspects around kind of learning about more kind of social science versions of research skills and stuff. I didn't really gel very well with being in a classroom scenario and in the hierarchy of a school. And one of the things that I found very difficult about classroom teaching was kind of ideas of authority, morality, and things like that. The particular value system, like it's quite a small C conservative value system that goes on in schools. And it was pointed out to me by my excellent lecturers at Cambridge that maybe I would do better off in academia, and I decided to look again at doing a PhD. And by this point in time, I'd already decided that maybe social sciences was a little bit more freeing, and like the boundaries of disciplines changed very much, which is something I'm sure we'll talk about later on. But at this point in time, the boundaries of the social sciences were much more osmotic and easier to sort of be interdisciplinary in that field. But of course, I still had to do all of the appropriate training in that. So I did a master's in sociology at Glasgow. Then I got PhD funding through the ESRC to carry on my studies at Goldsmiths in London. And one of the things that I carried through all of those degrees were the things that had essentially bugged me about my relationship with authority and power at Cambridge, and why we were made to kind of obey certain value paradigms, even when we know that they're not right for us, or feel that they're not right for us, or we can see that they're doing kind of active harm and things like that. So the thing that I wanted to look at when I got to my PhD was how knowledge is made and how value paradigms and power underpin the kinds of knowledge that we think are legitimate and worthwhile and valuable and things like that. So I spent about 3.5 years at Goldsmiths doing that with my supervisors, Heidi Mercer and Michaela Benson, who were brilliant. And once I'd finished that, I got a 1-year job at Durham as part of the sociology department there. Worked with some really excellent people, especially all the other teaching fellows there, learned a huge amount from them. Really interesting to be in a very, very different space from Goldsmiths to a more traditional Russell Group university like Durham. And while I was at Durham, I started to think about what I would like to do in terms of research afterwards. In terms of, I felt really that my PhD had been a project in and of itself. And I wanted to kind of finish that within the boundaries of the thesis and move on to something slightly different for my future research. And being an interdisciplinary researcher, having never really let go of the literature elements, of the cultural elements, the sort of arts and humanities elements of what I wanted to do, I found that the best and most welcoming funding body was the Leverhulme. So I applied to the Leverhulme, and I'm sure, again, we'll talk a little bit about what that application process was like.
Yeah.
I applied to the Leverhulme for funding. I was incredibly lucky to get it first time round. Worked at City University in London with Joe Littler and Ros Gill, who were absolute heroes of mine. And as they were, still are, completed that Leverhulme during COVID, which again was a huge factor in how that research happened. And once I'd kind of come to the end of the Leverhulme, I moved on to Aberdeen University up in Scotland. And I finished there just before Christmas last year.
Great, thank you. That's a brilliantly comprehensive history. You've actually answered my next two questions. So we're going to skip to the Leverhulme research funding thing. So yeah, the one thing I was really interested in, I hope people listening will be interested in, is the process of applying for research funding through something like the Leverhulme. Can you tell us a bit about that and kind of any insights you can offer people?
It was surprisingly straightforward, not easy, but very straightforward. So applying for funding through the Leverhulme, having applied for funding through other bodies since, I found the Leverhulme very, very open and simple in terms of what they wanted. And at first, when I was doing this application, I was trying to cover all bases and make it sort of bulletproof, I suppose is the term you might use, and really winding myself up in knots about it. And eventually, after a few days of doing that, I went back and I looked at the criteria and I talked to some people about what their process had been in getting Leverhulme funding. And I realized that what the Leverhulme really want is just really good ideas. And whilst they want it to be clear and comprehensive and doable and all those other things that a funding body might want, that actually what the Leverhulme are expecting from you and what they will take seriously as a funding bid is very different to what other funding bodies will take seriously. That it's not as if the expectations are less or looser or any less rigorous or anything. It's more that the Leverhulme is about imagination and about really allowing you to hone yourself as a scholar and as a researcher and kind of as a human being, as a person, that what they're interested in and investing in is not a particular project or a particular output or outcome that they can predict or rely upon or bank upon. What they actually want is to invest in the creation of ideas and collaborations and the growth of you as a person, and therefore what they want to see in the application is something quite different to a straightforward, say, ESRC or AHRC application. So eventually the thing that really allowed me to get the funding application up to a submittable point was when I just let go of everything. And instead of trying to finesse things, I just said what I wanted to do.
Right.
And I wanted to do it in really, really simple terms. And this is the thing that's been bugging me for a while. And this is what I want to do about it.
Great. And that was the thing that got their attention. So that's,
yeah.
That's fantastic. That's a top tip. So I'm kind of thinking, you mentioned applying for other sources of funding, and you sort of said that's really different. So I guess I hope people listening to this will be thinking about lots of sources of funding. Do you have any tips for kind of other approaches when you've approached other bodies? Or
Well, not terribly, given that
No?
I got everything
Okay.
funding very, very quickly out of my PhD.
Right.
And like by sort of the anniversary of my Viva, I knew that I had Leverhulme funding.
Right.
And that's carried me through until my Aberdeen job.
Right.
And it's only been like fairly recently that I've started to apply for or think about applying for other sources of funding. But I'm aware that in other funding bodies, they're much more concerned about things like impact, which is something that the Leverhulme are very clear that they're not terribly interested in, the kind of metrics and citations and impact and engaging with the creation of policy, for instance, is not something that the Leverhulme consider within their remit. And that's why it's such an ideas focus, such a creative and concept oriented funding body, where you do different types of work when you're working with Leverhulme. And when you're doing work for other funding bodies, it's much more goal oriented, much more outcome and output oriented. And with so it's really about the destination, whereas the Leverhulme is really about the journey that you go
right.
on. So the the point of having the Leverhulme funding is what happens to you in those 3 years that you have it. Whereas the point of, say, ESRC funding is what are you going to produce?
Yeah, that's such a clear distinction. And I think, as you know, for anyone listening going down this track, really understand what your funding body does and what's important to them before you start trying to apply to them. I think that's come out very clearly. So when we originally spoke, and you mentioned it a little while ago, you kind of moved from humanities into social science, and you've worked to kind of across both. Both of those areas are quite under pressure at the moment. So funding is shrinking and it's getting quite difficult, you know, and I just wondered if you had any thoughts about how to survive in that world now.
Gosh, what a really big question.
Yeah, it is, isn't it?
Do I have the answer to saving academia? Unfortunately,
no.
not a simple answer. I think because we're so pressured in different quarters of academia, so it's both there are financial pressures, there are metrics pressures, but both around kind of teaching things like the NSS, things like the research excellence framework. We're pressured from in kind of social and cultural aspects around issues to do with cancel culture and things like that. I'm pressured in terms of student numbers, the student mental health crisis. We're pressured in terms of what's going on in schools and then what we have to deal with as teachers with those students when they come to us. So with all of the milieu that we're working in, getting funding has become increasingly important, because essentially the nominal 40% that you get in a lecturing contract for research doesn't really exist under all of those different pressures. So if you want to do any funding, particularly if you're the kind of researcher that I am and that many others I know are, where you're doing ethnographic work that requires you to be immersed in your research field essentially full time, it's very, very difficult to do any of that work if you're also managing a teaching schedule, if you're also managing administration and the general kind of health and well-being of your department. So yeah, one of the real pressures at the minute in terms of getting funding is actually having the time and space and the mental capacity to do that. And I think that comes down to wider issues of the neoliberal university and the kind of the crisis in staff well-being and mental health and student well-being and mental health.
Yeah, I mean, it's an issue we all hear a lot about all the time, you know, and very much needing to be addressed. Just thinking about looking back on your career so far, what if you were advising yourself as someone starting out, what would be your top tip?
If I was advising myself as someone starting out, what would be my top tip? I got a really good tip actually from some friends of mine the other day around making a narrative for yourself in academia. One of the things that I find really difficult is negotiating that area between being an interdisciplinary researcher and the fact that that is much welcomed in academia, but also the fact that to be part of a university, you have to be part of a department or a subject area. So you need to be able to sell yourself, to story yourself as a human geographer or a sociologist or an anthropologist or a political scientist or something like that. But if you're an interdisciplinary researcher, you don't necessarily fit coherently in one of those categories. You don't necessarily want to. You don't necessarily identify yourself intellectually or in your teaching as one or other things. You may have just a project or a set of questions that you want to do, and you don't really mind the banner under which you do them. Mm-hmm. It may be cohered by a set of methodological resources or methods that you continually use. You might think of yourself as a quantitative researcher or an ethnographer or an interviewer or something like that. And you might be brought together by a set of theories or concepts. And one of the things that was said to me recently that I find so helpful in order to just think about who I am and what my identity is what is it that is, what is your coherent narrative, and how, and which sets of these things is it that your coherent narrative revolves around? Is it questions? Is it topic? Is it methodology? Is it discipline? Or is it theories and concepts? And I realized that mine is more of a theoretical conceptual basis, that essentially what I'm interested in is power and how it interacts and how people negotiate power, particularly in everyday spaces. And if I were going back and giving advice to myself as a new researcher, I would tell myself to focus my narrative more clearly around who I am. And I've always tried to do that, but it hasn't really sunk in and become so clear up until recently.
That's great, great advice. So coming to the last question now, so a little bit about your future. What are your plans? How are you planning to develop?
One of my research participants in my PhD ethnography, which was looking at how sociologists write and how, what the relationship is between how they write and how they form knowledge and how the knowledge is taken seriously and stuff. So I spent about 15 months, something like that, with various different sociologists, different aspects of their career, talking to them about the ways that they go about writing. And one of my participants said to me at the time that she was essentially a filmmaker or a documentary maker or even a writer who happens to be interested, whose focus was in social justice, and who happened to be doing that through the mechanism of academia. And that if she wasn't in academia, she would be, for instance, making documentaries, or she would be a journalist or something like that. But academia was the mode through which she was asking these social justice questions. And I thought that's a really interesting way of looking at your relationship with academia. And I think for the future, that's kind of how I want to be understanding myself and placing myself. So I'm kind of now seeing myself more as a writer and an ethnographer, kind of an investigator who works through academia as a particular space currently. But I'm considering how I might want to branch out from that, how I might want to develop within that. So I would, I'm thinking a lot about writing a trade book. I'm thinking a lot about how I might do different kinds of projects, maybe things that are more visual. I started to do some visual ethnography around Santiago in my Leverhulme. And I'm thinking about how I might want to expand that, different ways that I can be more creative in the methods that I'm using, and particularly in the presentation of things that I'm using. And one of the things that I would really like to do in the future, of course, is apply for more Leverhulme funding. That's the goal, because the Leverhulme are just really, really incredible to work with. Full of kindness and generosity, and just a really valuable and very, very precious space to work with in an academic economy that is all about impact and metrics and bureaucracy and kind of these neoliberal ideas of kind of measuring ourselves and stuff. The attitude of the Leverhulme and just the way that comes in, comes through the people that you actually meet as part of it, is just a really life-affirming and intellectually valuable and creative space. So the ultimate goal is to be working with the Leverhulme again.
Brilliant. That's such a great positive message. Thank you. So that's about it for this episode. So thank you so much, Sarah. Thank you for everything you've said there and all your insights. And thank you to the Leverhulme. Because they introduced us. And join us next time on Careers in Your Ears, when we will continue exploring researchers' careers